P-51. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. Aside from the panicked urgency of the threat they had fled Birchwood to avoid, the group's arrival at Phil Norris's old farmhouse in Eastview was an emotional moment for Emma and Clark in particular. Over the course of several chaotic post-contact years, considerably more events of extraterrestrial significance had occurred here than at the Birchwood drive-in. But the fact that the drive-in had played host to the messenger's first ever public appearance lent it a particularly special place in humanity's psyche. Eastview, however, meant far more to Dan and his family than did the drive-in. Before it was Phil's, and indeed before it had been Walker's, the McCarthys and most others in Birchwood had always referred to the area as Stevenson Farm, in honor of its original holder from long before any of them were born. Beginning with Dan's initial calling to the cornfield, where his mind received then mysterious instructions on where to find the messenger's cloaked craft within their chosen safe haven of Lolo National Forest, both the field and the farmhouse itself had played host to many of the most consequential moments of all. There had been Clark's losing fight with a force field during his attempt to stop Richard Walker from exposing the hoax at a time when doing so would have done far more harm than good. There had been Dan's regrettably necessary public display of his temporary uplift powers, minutes before he and Tara's first ever trip to New Kerguelen. And there had, of course, tragically, been Phil's murder. The surroundings brought different memories to light for everyone, with the only real positive one being that of Dan's perfectly timed proposal to Emma as Comet Il Diavolo streaked across the sky overhead. Tara had spent less time at Stevenson Farm than most of the others, Godfrey being the only one to have made no previous visits and Chip having made only a few in the course of his time as Phil's lawyer, entirely because of her relatively late arrival on the Birchwood scene. Indeed, the circumstances around her first visit reflected this perfectly, occurring as it did when she innocently followed Dan on his way to visit the farmhouse's former owner, the infamous Richard Walker, whose IDA leak had set everything in motion. Only at that point, a year after the core trio of Emma, Dan, and Clark had come upon the full truth, did Tara realize how deep the burden of their enforced secrecy ran, and just how much they'd been trying to insulate her against and to keep from her for her own good. Nowadays, there were no secrets within the group. Together, they still held knowledge that would further destabilize the world as a whole if it came out in the wrong way, such as the truly heinous things the architects depicted on the now-exposed Dortlu Tepe carvings had proven capable of on New Kerguelen over thousands of years as they sought to constrain humanity's development from afar. The untimely and gruesome death of one of their own, the longtime McCarthy family friend and confidant Phil Norris, was one more such truth that the wider world was as yet unaware of. And all that had happened in the past 24 hours, during which just about everyone felt like they'd aged something closer to 24 years, it was difficult to truly internalize the fact that Phil had been dead for less than a full day. Emotionally, though, it felt to Emma and Clark as though no time at all had passed. Because of this, as soon as their flash of arrival subsided and they were staring once more at the familiar hallway that their old friend had made his own after the home's infamous previous owner eventually met his fate, they were instantly transported back to the harrowing events of the previous night. Baby Piper, having been asleep when Leisha hurriedly took the group from her family's living room, was sufficiently perturbed by the sudden brightness and vague feeling of movement to quickly burst into uncharacteristic tears. This made the moment of arrival even more difficult for Emma, who was holding her tightly, as her mind felt natural and inevitable concerns that the teleportation had somehow hurt her. In reality, it had only startled the baby awake, with her new, unfamiliar surroundings offering little comfort, even though her closest family members filled the space around her. Dan immediately tried to reassure Emma of this, while Tara quite successfully distracted Piper from the unsettling novelty of her surroundings by playing some rapid rounds of peekaboo and got your nose. Emma quickly handed Piper to Tara, an enthusiastic recipient, then turned away before placing her head in her hands. Tara saw fit to ramp up the distraction at this point and carried Piper into the kitchen, away from her troubled mother, who was, in turn, circled by most of the others. Only Chip Petrovich, reluctant to intrude as by far the newest member of the inner circle, didn't know where to go. He lingered awkwardly for a few seconds before Clark tipped his head to call him in closer. In Clark's eyes, he was part of the group, deemed trustworthy by Phil, a more cautious man than any other Clark had known. Chip had also proven himself in his action since the man's untimely passing.
"What's up?"
Clark asked Emma, speaking in a low whisper.
"Is it Phil? Just remembering everything and it's too much?"
Emma's sobs were slow, but deep, of a kind few had ever seen or heard from her. She forced out a nod.
"It was right here,"
she said, forcing the words through her tears with no small degree of effort.
"Just last night, and he's still here. He's in the freezer like a piece of meat."
"There was nowhere else to put him,"
Clark replied, more sharply than intended, but with a clear impatience at having to readdress this particular point. It troubled him greatly, too, that his only clear course of action had been to preserve Phil's body in such a way until the group could decide what to do in an instance where informing the police and making it known that they had found Phil would have fatally wounded their chances of bringing his killers and their masters to justice. Their chances of success in terms of that objective were already looking bleak. What with the remarkable hit on gangland supremo James West, having taken out the sole lead they had gained from Leisha's deep dive into the minds of the killer himself. Leisha, so familiar to the group by now that his alienness almost went unnoticed, despite how plainly he would have stuck out among them in the eyes of any external observer, took the rare step of moving forward and placing a hand on Emma's shoulder. She was already leaning into Dan's supportive frame, but the decidedly non-human feeling of the two wide finger-like divisions and long, dexterous thumb which composed Leisha's hand caused her spine to stiffen. Undeniably, the automatic feelings that came with physical contact with any of the messengers weren't often pleasant. Handshakes were as good as it got, given not only what they represented, but also that they tended to come with face-to-face eye contact with a smiling alien. A surprise touch like this, however, fell at the opposite end of the spectrum in combining the natural unease of being touched from behind from anyone out of sight, and also the somewhat skeletal sensation of Leisha's fingers. If Emma had been consciously thinking about any of it, rather than reacting only with a natural physical unease, she would have been glad that her shoulders were at least covered by the fabric of a blouse, and that Leisha's eerily smooth and almost slippery-feeling skin hadn't made direct contact with her own. As with the feeling of his fingers' shape, the cool sensation of Leisha's skin was fairly unsettling, even when the touch was expected. But on an occasion like this, it would have perhaps taken Emma's reaction from momentary unease to a far more expressive discomfort and displeasure.
"I am sorry for startling you," Leisha said, purposefully communicating his words to everyone in the vicinity, despite directing them to Emma, and doing so for the purposes of being open and keeping everyone on the same page.
He then took his hand from Emma's shoulder for the clearer purpose of hastening the passing of her somewhat understandable reaction to the unexpected but well-intentioned touch.
"But Emma, Phil would be telling us to focus on the present. We have to consider our situation as it is now, with this threat of intervention in Birchwood."
Emma slouched slightly once again, her instinctive body language not reflecting anything other than the fading of her brief discomfort.
"He's right," William Godfrey stated in agreement. "My source is Granite, a Washington insider who was very closely advising Slater until they had a falling out a few weeks ago. She doesn't let any individual get particularly close these days, much as I don't, and for the same reason of having been stung and burnt so badly by that scumbag Neil."
The reference to the loathsome Jack Neil brought rage to everyone's minds, as it always did, to the extent that they all wished Godfrey hadn't mentioned him even in passing. None commented on this, however, reluctant to draw any more attention to it, or to cause what was perhaps their least favorite subject to linger for a second longer than necessary.
"More broadly, though," Godfrey began, and I feel this is something to raise now. Emma, I know we have the 2020 panel tomorrow night. I know we've been thinking of letting things simmer until then, planning our moves tomorrow and eviscerating them on live TV with everything at our disposal. But I don't think waiting until tomorrow to react is a viable option anymore. As the others listened just as closely, Emma focused intently on Godfrey's words to see exactly where he was going. Phil's death was botched by an overzealous criminal, he said, so I can just about hold my breath on that. Mesut's murder was despicable, but it was within the grounds of the Gravesen, and I can see the political motivation. They didn't know what was in his briefcase, and for all they knew, he might have had hidden camera footage of the intrusion in his hotel room with close-up views of the corrupt guards' faces. So that, as horrific as it was, and as much as I'll see to it that they pay for it, that I can at least contextualize. But ordering agents to Birchwood, to your house, and when they knew the child was in there? Godfrey seethed, trailing off with a barely discernible headshake of rage that somehow said more than 1,000 words ever could. No one interrupted. Godfrey had done and said several small things in recent days that led the group to see that he really was now with them in a true sense of the word, rather than just on their side for strategic benefits. It had seemingly begun when Leisha and Clark took risky direct action to save his life in Buenos Aires, and had since then deepened as he saw how much the Ford McCarthy clan was dealing with, and how tirelessly and selflessly they accepted the load that circumstance had thrust upon their collective shoulders with no reward and insufficient recognition. The way Godfrey acted around Piper in particular had seen Emma warm to him in a way she had never expected, while Clark and Dan were impressed by his bottle, to use one of the Englishman's own favored terms, in facing up to difficult and often threatening situations without fear. Without doubt, they now saw Godfrey not as an ancillary associate to their inner circle, but a fully fledged member. I can't and won't accept any of what they've done in the past 24 hours, Godfrey insisted. But I really cannot turn a blind eye to this for a single second. As soon as they've played their next ridiculous hand here, I'm going to Buenos Aires. Their free reign ends tonight. Emma? We can talk about exactly what I'll do and say and when I'll do and say it, but I'm going. Tonight.